This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's STIRLINGsoap.com.
Pressed by Torres, the set, the kick, and the pitch. It's deep to left field. This one may be off the wall, maybe in the screen.
Lang and Chernyshev on top as expected. They're eligible for Salt Lake City.
Indian All-Star.
But today on Indian All-Stars podcast, I have the honor and privilege to be speaking with Indian All-Star number 80, Elizabeth Phillips. You might know her from her MMA exploits, but welcome. Thank you for taking the time to do this. I appreciate it a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. So, in case people don't know who you are, or you know, maybe someone's tuning into this for the first time and getting exposed to you, tell us a little bit about yourself, about your background, and about what you do. Just in a nutshell.
Okay, well, my name is Elizabeth Phillips. I currently live in Spokane, Washington. Was born in Spokane, but raised in Omak. And okay, sorry. I was like, oh my gosh. Did I bump out of it or something?
Yeah, you froze for a second and then it hung up.
Oh man, I don't know what it is. It must be the service or something in my house. I don't know. It's weird.
Okay.
But anyway, I've done a lot of these, so it's no big deal. So born in Spokane, but I was raised in Omak. I've been out in Spokane for about 15, 16 years, almost as long as I lived in Omak. Got my undergrad in race and culture studies with a minor in Africana studies and Native American studies. Predominantly Africana studies, though.
And then I went
and got my master's. And so after getting my master's in public administration, I worked in child welfare and then also doing mixed martial arts. And so I've been involved in mixed martial arts for over 10 years. So working in those two fields, that's what I do as far as work goes.
That's some drastically different hats to wear, but that's really cool. And that's the day job is great work. That's great work. So let's talk about we'll talk about both of those. So what drew you to the child welfare portion of things? That's sometimes that's kind of tough duty.
Yeah, so I actually never really planned on going into being a social worker, working in child welfare, CPS, even worked along ICW, which is the Indian Child Welfare Unit, worked alongside with them as a state worker, and that's, has your up your pros and cons with that, right? So, but anyway, I actually really like the work, and I just ended up doing that because when I got into my master's program, public administration deals a lot with like city work, city policy, things like that. And so there's a number of different things you can do with that master's degree. And so I decided to do community work, which led me to work with a lot of like the homeless population, low income, which then led me on to take a position as a social worker. And they were needing people at the time because I got hired during COVID. So I started, which was difficult being trained in that kind of setting because it's different. So I'd say the last 4 or 5 years, ever since I've gotten my master's, I've been doing a lot of community work, which is really gratifying.
Okay, now let's change gears. So we go from that to punching people in the face.
Well, I
Tell
started punching.
me about that journey a little bit.
Yeah, that starts way before I started training. That was kind of the culture and the norm growing up, especially in OMAC, as you probably already know since
I
you're from
do.
OMAC.
When I was a kid, I went to Miss Phelan school and got in a fight every day. So.
And me being like a mixed multicultural person, I got it from all types of people, the natives, the whites, the Mexicans, you name it. Just being mixed in general, we have our own journey, right? But I liked being different. I liked being unique. I always knew that I was unique and kind of had this sense of pride and confidence growing up, that I always carried that with me, but I had a temper starting from about, I don't know, when do girls start acting up? Around 12 or 13. Yeah,
That
that's when I was
was it.
starting to, and so I channeled that anger in a bad way. And so I got lots of, I was in lots of street fights, lots of stuff like that growing up, over on the res and stuff, and in that little, Okanagan County in general. So that's just a, kind of the culture there, rough and tough kind of thing.
So then, at some point, you decided to redirect that. What did was there like a big event that happened that caused you to change? Were you going to go to jail? Or no, I'm not just joking about that, but
Actually, no, you're not far off, actually. That was, the whole street fighting and stuff, getting into fights and stuff, that I did a lot of that in high school and stuff, but I ended up, I was a jock growing up, so I played all those sports and stuff, and those kind of get me and my older sibling out of trouble when we were growing up because we were both kind of wild. So I played basketball, I played softball, all every single sport my parents had us in it. And so they kept us busy like that. But as I got older and went on to college and decided to go, to come to Spokane to go to community college at first, I did other sport actually. I came to Spokane Falls Community College and I played soccer actually for 2 years, and we won like our division or whatever. We were like a really, really good soccer team at Spokane Falls Community College, and won our championship like almost the first year, and then the second year we won. But I had a lot of fun doing that. And I ran track for Spokane Falls Community College too. And then, going through my college career, I ended up tearing my Achilles tendon running in the 200 yard dash.
Yikes.
So yeah, so I was like done running track and all this stuff. I think I was about 23 or 24. But I was also at the same time getting in trouble. I ended up going to jail. And when I got out of jail, after doing 6 months in jail, after getting in trouble, college, all this crazy stuff going on, then that's when my mixed martial arts journey began after I got out of jail. So you weren't far off earlier when you said jail. Because I was wild in college too. I was getting in trouble at 21, 22. So, you know, I was trying to go to college and stuff, but I was involved in all kinds of crazy stuff. I could write a book about all the crazy stuff that was going on in my life at that time. I was in a bad relationship at the time. That's what led me to go to jail. And then once I got out of jail, I decided to go train jiu-jitsu. One of my friends in OMAC took me to a gym and said, you should try this out. And I got hooked. I got choked out, I think, in like under one minute by this little blonde chick that just choked. And I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe this little chick just choked me out. And so ever since then, I've just been training and stuff. So okay. I started about 23, 24 years old. I started doing wrestling and Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in today's world, they have girls wrestling in school. Would that have been something that you would have been into at that point, do you think?
Well, I always liked wrestling, but wrestling was not popular when I was – I graduated in about 2005.
Right. So it wasn't really a thing then. So
it wasn't a thing. It didn't exist. It was mm-hmm. awkward. It was weird. And I played 4 years of high school basketball. And was really into that. And, you know, I even played out, you know, after I graduated, we would play women's league and stuff. You know, I did all that. But once I did mixed martial arts, it was just a whole unique thing in and of itself. And I have a whole new appreciation for wrestling. I coached wrestling at Lewis and Clark High School for 3 years.
Oh, great.
A few years back.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, in which I learned a lot about wrestling being a coach.
Well, so, that works, right?
Yeah, right.
But then it's like, oh.
That was the most times I learned the most about wrestling was when I was coaching. So, and we had a couple girls go to state. So, I'm just like an open book. I feel like I talk too much because there's so many things that led me to this uh-huh. that it's just like, it's not just one like, oh, this crazy event happened. So then I started like all these, difficult roads and things of my past were going on up and down, crazy all around. So there's a lot of things that led me to MMA.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool story.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of angles to it, but cool story. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
So I have a little bit of an odd question for you. What's your life's motto or your go-to saying, or what do you have one? I don't know that everybody has one, but I do, and I'm just curious to.
I don't really have a motto, but there's one thing that I've been saying to myself after I started working with like a sports psychologist, and I say it into myself every morning, and it's kind of like this thing that drives you to believe in yourself.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a saying, and I'll say it real quick if I can remember. And I'm acting like I say it all the time, but I do. I am aggressive and relentless. I don't care what anybody. Sorry, I'm like put on the spot, so I'm trying to remember.
Sorry about that.
No, you're good. You're good. I'm trying to think of it. I am thankful for the opportunity to fight. I am aggressive and relentless. I have no fears of losing or giving up, or I have no fear of losing, and I never, ever give up. Something like that. I might have missed a couple, but it's something along the lines of that. And I say that to myself in the morning, every morning, and I even write down throughout the day, like, what I did good and then one thing I need to work on. And that I feel like is kind of my life motto right now into my mindset and how I go about my, not just in fighting, but just my thoughts, how I think and how I move and how I do things all shapes how we are. So if I'm putting that in my head and saying it to the mirror every morning, then that just sets me up for a better day, a more positive day.
Exactly. That's great. I like
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
And all right, here's so what's the funniest story that you have about your life?
Funny story?
Yeah, what's the fun, just this is a random question, I know. So, and it could be related to just general life, it could be related to MMA, it could be related to your day job stuff, whatever. Just something funny.
But you said a funny story, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Shoot. What's one? So there's a few different ones. There's some that I'm like, I don't share that one.
Okay. Well, I won't make you do that.
There's some that I'm like, I probably shouldn't share. A funny story. I don't know if this is funny to some people, but about 3 years ago, I had this 24-year-old chick having road rage on me. And it was like downtown. I had just dropped my kiddo off at school and I was going to go to work. And I was driving up. I think it was Division, I think. But I was downtown and I was going to go up north to North Division. And this girl like speeds around me and gets in front of me and slams on her brakes. And I'm like, what the heck? And I guess I must have gotten in front of her earlier and it pissed her off. I don't know what it was, but she stopped at the light. We're at the stoplight. And she gets out. And then she starts walking towards my car. And so I get out and she... I think was taking out her phone to take a picture, but I thought she was like going to punch me. So I just did a quick 1-2 and it just dropped her right at the pavement. And I got scared and I got in my car and I just drove off before like she could like record it or something. I don't know, but it was like the craziest thing ever. And then somebody, I like found out who the chick was because she was posting about it on Facebook and people were like, did you do that? And I'm like, yeah. And they're just like, oh my God, that's freaking hilarious. And, because I don't know who does stuff like that. You know, like I never would get out of a car and approach somebody at the stoplight, but
well, see, that's the thing. You don't know what that other person is capable of, right?
I didn't know if she had a gun or what. Right. So but this is in Spokane, right? And so I'm, you know, kind of from a small town, even though I'm used to Spokane now, but you never know what people are going to do. So, yeah, I had to, like, drop her there on the pavement. But I was trying to find a non-MMA-related one so people would kind of pick. But that one was probably the funniest and craziest one that I've had in a while. I probably have more. I just can't think of them right now.
That's okay. That's all right. So, that's pretty good, I have to say.
It's kind of a crazy story. I don't know about funny. It was funny to me afterwards.
Sure.
I was like,
kind of scary at the time, but kind of all the way around.
Yeah.
But then, yeah. So with regard to MMA, would you recommend that to girls coming up?
Yeah. And, you know, especially since we're on your Indian All-Stars, you know, especially like the Indigenous women coming up in our area, specifically kind of talked about it earlier about resources and things. What I wanted to bring up is that they opened up OMAC Kickboxing Academy, I think it is. I heard about it and I think it's great that they're starting to teach jiu-jitsu because now we have a resource kind of at least close to the reservation where Indigenous women can come and train and do self-defense.
Yeah.
Because as you know, it's kind of a thing going around, you know, of the missing and murdered Indigenous women.
Right.
That statistics don't lie, right? So it's more important now than ever for all women to be training martial arts, and I hope that we can collaborate and do more things, and I can teach more seminars. I remember I came over with Dan, and Amkin had me come to the Longhouse in Dissatelle, and we did a domestic violence self-defense type class, and there was about, I don't know, about five or six women that came to it, and it was awesome, and I wanted to do something like that again, but it just never happened. So I would love to do something more like that.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's say a young person from here decided to, they showed up at the gym when you're there, and they're the tough kid, but they don't know anything about what it takes to actually get in the octagon or get in the ring or whatever. And what's the best piece of advice you would have for someone like that? Who might be thinking about
it? Who's kind of just standing, like, just wondering about it and wondering what it takes to be in martial arts?
Well, they've taken
the step to go to the gym
and are thinking about getting into it. What's the one thing that you would say that, okay, this is the way it is?
This is the way it is, yeah. Consistent, hard work, and being humbled. I think that's the greatest thing about mixed martial arts, is that you really expose who you really are, and you can't hide who you really are, because it exposes you in an instant, because a lot of people come in and they, everybody has like a certain ego, levels to it, you know, and whether it's big ego or a small ego, it gets checked, because it really exposes what you really know and what your knowledge is of the sport. And if you don't know, you have to be willing to just be, there's the hammer and the nail. You got to be willing to be the nail for, like, I don't know, a year straight at least. So being consistent and having an open mind to learning and knowing that you don't know anything and that you're not that great, you have to know that you have to be okay with that to grow. To be able to last. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Good words.
Yeah. And it's like, it's so hard to say one thing, because it's so kind of, you know, not a black and white thing. It's kind of complicated.
Sure. It varies from person to person too, whatever their baggage and whatever their attitude is.
It's such a demanding, hard sport that if you're not willing to do hard work, then it won't work out. But as long as you're willing to be consistent and do hard work and be humbled and be okay with that, then you'll be okay. Yeah.
It's a good takeaway, because you are going to get humbled a bit anyway, no matter how good you are, right?
Everybody, if you want to be the best, you will be humbled a lot, not even a little, a lot, you know, and if you're not, then you're not going with people that are great. And nowadays in 2023, there's a lot of great mixed martial artists and fighters out there.
Sure.
You're definitely, if you're not getting beat and learning something, then you definitely aren't around enough people, you know, to be growing yourself. Yeah.
Great. Who's your biggest influence? Whether maybe give me one for your life and one for your MMA stuff. Same person, that's cool too, but.
Yeah. For life, I think it was my second grade teacher, Mrs. Sackman, and my seventh grade teacher, Chuck Morris. And I took these two people because they were very unique in how they taught and dealt with children and their teaching style. I think about people that I was around a lot when I was younger, who I was learning from every day, who was influencing me. And those two We're very assertive, aggressive in a way, demanded the best from you and called you out if you didn't do what you had the potential to do, and almost scared me sometimes, but I came to respect them a lot growing up, and I never really forgot that. So like, those two teachers are just people that I think of right off the bat that I always kind of wanted to impress and be successful for, because I didn't want to let them down. And I never had that experience with any other teacher or a coach. I didn't really have a lot of coaches that I was, you know, looked up to, you know, sadly to say, growing up in OMAC, I didn't have too many coaches that were my favorite or that I admired, but I did have a couple teachers that were great. And they, those two were really good leaders. Yeah. You probably know them.
I do.
Yeah. They were like, you know, set me straight, and I liked that about them. And I don't think that type of style is encouraged today because it might be considered hard or rough. But I felt like it kept me in line, so I liked it. But those two are my influential life people that I kind of will never forget and guiding me. But MMA, that's a hard one, because I guess just the women that I was, you know, started training with, my friends got me into MMA. I didn't really think much of it. I knew that I wanted to do combat sports. I wanted to do boxing because I really like boxing. I just had, you know, some friends from OMAC that told me to go train, and I just started training. And like, I guess my team at the time was pretty strong, and was called Sick Jitsu. And, it was the first gym that I trained with, and I was with them for 7 years, and I ended up getting into the UFC with that team, and, was there for a few years. You know, there was a few females at the time, Misha Tate and Juliana Pena, who were training at that time and were really just killers, and a lot of good people from the Northwest that wrestled and that were going into MMA, mm-hmm. and that were doing really good. And so those kind of people all influenced me to kind of be great and get a lot of mat time to learn wrestling, because I was starting late. I never wrestled in high school or college. Uh-huh. So I just was a natural athlete. I did every other sport growing up. And so I really spent a lot of time on the mats, and I really was encouraged and inspired by all of those people. So I would say them. Yeah, for okay. sure. All those women that I trained with coming up.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, you said you were, in our previous interaction a little bit, you said you're in training, or you're in fight mode, right?
I'm in a fight camp. Well, actually, my fight camp doesn't start until really like Monday.
Okay.
But yeah, that's about 8 weeks out. And so okay. I've already been kind of training, so it's a nice, good training camp for me to not really worry about being in shape, because I'm already in shape. So it's kind of nice because I get to work on, you know, sharpening skill sets instead of worried about, you know, is my cardio good or not, you know? So,
yeah.
So that's the cool thing about having a nice camp like this. And it's in Columbia, North Carolina on May 27th. And so it's across the country. I'm always having to fight far away because I have a lot of fights on my resume now. So I don't have a lot of women to be matched up with in the Northwest area. So that's usually a lot of people like, why don't you ever fight at home? You know, like a lot of people. But it's funny because I did a kickboxing match at 12 Tribes before, and that was really fun. I did one like 5 years ago there, and I won like $600.
A good night all the way around.
yeah it was a really fun time. I have a lot on my resume, so it'll be far away, but I'm looking forward to it. And then I have another one actually on June 24th, and that's going to be in Wichita Falls, Texas. So I have two fights coming up, actually.
Bang, bang.
Yeah.
Right in a row. That's impressive to take them. That doesn't happen very often these days anymore. It seems to be, I mean, back in the day when, you know, boxing was the big thing.
Yeah.
Muhammad Ali would fight every 6 weeks, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now guys wait a year and a half before they have another fight. But
yeah.
That's probably better for their health, but.
Yeah. You definitely can't really do that in MMA, but. Sure. You know, every other month you probably could, you know, but there would become a certain point where you would have to take a kind of a break.
Right.
Over the years, you can't really do it every 2 months, but, I would say pretty good is, every 4 months or every 6 months, at least is good for MMA. Yeah.
So I have kind of a dumb question, and it kind of depends on whether you're on the, winning end or the not so winning end. What's the recovery time?
After an MMA fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like most of them, really, even the ones I've lost, a lot of my losses are like really close fights, mm-hmm. and like I have a lot of like robberies sure. that where politics came into play. There was a couple UFC fights where I. It was pretty one-sided, but politics played and I got screwed out of a decision. No. But that happens, you know, quite often in the sport. Unfortunately, that's just the politics of it. But I've been fortunate with my losses that I haven't really gotten hurt.
Okay.
I've had some black eyes and stuff. But the worst thing that ever happened was through training, and it was I think it was from me being armbarred or something at some point, and I had some cartilage that was floating around in my elbow. Ooh. And it was preventing me from straightening my arm out. And so I had to have elbow surgery to fix it. And I fought and luckily won with it like that. And then after my fight, I had to have surgery because I already had a fight scheduled. So I had to fight with like a bum elbow, wow. which really... At the time, I didn't notice it in the fight, but afterwards, I was like, wow, my arm is really messed up. And so, yeah, I ended up having elbow surgery after that. But I think that's, like, the worst thing that's really happened as far as an injury. Well, luckily, it's not a brain injury.
Right.
You know, so I haven't really taken a lot of damage. So I'm fortunate in that aspect. Either one. But recovery time, I would say a couple weeks, maybe. Okay. Depending on how much of a war it was, if it was a, you know, where I have black eyes and stuff, you just wait for the black eyes to go away and then start training again. Yeah. Okay. So,
mm-hmm. Okay. So after all that, jumping through all these hoops, here's the last one. What's one question that I didn't ask you that you wish I would?
I don't know.
Okay.
I guess I should have looked at these questions before you asked them. That's a good one. What's my favorite what do I like to do on my downtime?
Yeah. That's a good one.
So right now I'm learning Kabil Salish language at my son's school. Like I told you, we're pretty multicultural. Mm-hmm. But my son is Yakima. I think he's enrolled Yakima on his dad's side of the family. But he goes to Salish school and we're learning Kabil Salish, so like Okanagan.
Right.
And so we kind of do that every Wednesday and sometimes every Monday. And my son's like almost fluent in it. I'm not even anywhere close to being fluent, but I just thought that's kind of like a cool thing that I've been doing for the past 4 years at my son's school is like learning Okanagan Salish. And it's been awesome.
That is fabulous.
Yeah.
I know just a teeny bit. My dad used to be able to hit my great-grandma, his grandma, used to speak to him in that, and he had understood it, but he couldn't answer back. I remember when I was a kid being at the powwows over in Espelum and listening to my great-grandma talking with her old cronies there and laughing. They're probably telling all kinds of dirty jokes that we didn't understand, but
we'd be
talking and laughing and, you know, good stuff. Anyway, that's cool that you're doing that. That's really awesome.
Yeah, so it's like some I just like saying, you know, stuff that never really gets mentioned or that I don't spend a lot of time talking about. So it's fun now to kind of point on that. So I had to think of something to answer your question. So
that's a great one. I really like that. And the fact that you're eager to learn it, I think, is the coolest part of it. So.
Yeah, definitely. So, but I appreciate you having
your son is smoking you on it. So.
Oh yeah. So they don't even speak English the first half of the day. Like, even if you don't know anything, like, you just have to kind of just go along with it and figure it out, because they don't speak English at all the first half of the day. And then afterwards, most of them know so much Salish now that they speak Salish anyway. But it's amazing how fluent the kids are and stuff. So it's a great school.
That's fabulous.
Great school for kiddos up until sixth grade, and then I think it ends there, unfortunately. But just has been an awesome place for my kiddo. So yeah, it's been
There was a Salish program at Omak High School, but the teacher had some health problems and they haven't refilled that. I hope they bring it back, because it's a cool thing.
Yeah, it definitely is. And it's I like it. Spokane's pretty cool because they even offer it for like adults that don't even have kids that go to school there. They have like interns that are coming from like colleges and stuff like that are kind of interested in learning the language too. Cool. So they're really passing it around, and like, which is awesome, because I think it's great for everybody to know, like, make it common.
Yes. German, you know, French in school. That's great.
Yeah. So it's really cool. We had like somebody came all the way from Ireland. She speaks Gaelic fluently, but she came to learn about Salish, and so I was like, wow, that's pretty cool.
That is. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
And
when you get more people and you do more of these and stuff, maybe have me again down the road and we can meet back and see what's going on.
I'm looking forward to that. Catching up with you after June to see how
everything after went. My life slows down and I can take a break. Yeah.
But we'll be watching. Yeah,
sounds good.
Oh, one more thing I forgot to ask you. Aside from your day job working with the kids and training and getting ready to fight, you do some announcing, some.
Oh yeah, so I've been getting into commentating. I did fight interviews down in North Platte, Nebraska, which is you know, in the Midwest area. Mm-hmm. I've done about three or four of their shows, and then I commentate an amateur show out in Liberty Lake. So I'm starting to get experience and stuff like that. I don't know how far that will go, but I really enjoy doing it and having it kind of like build my resume, because it's a ton of fun. So yeah, I wouldn't mind doing it as a gig, and it's a source of income to come through besides just my day job. So and it's a fun way to do it. So I love it.
Can't beat going and watching the fights, right?
It's amazing. Like, some of them I do the one out in Liberty Lake I was doing for free, actually, so I don't even get paid for that. But they just let me get on there and talk, so I get to practice.
Do they at least let you in for free?
Oh yeah. Yep. Okay. Don't pay. Nope.
All right, well, I guess that will about wrap it up for
Sounds good, because I have to go train. But yeah, so anyways,
thank
yeah,
you.
So whenever you want to talk and do another one, just let me know, okay?
I will do it.
All right, sounds good. All right, again. We'll see ya.
We'll see you later.
Bye-bye.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you gotta do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.